system in the city would be blaring alarms at the unauthorized blaster fire. The weapons Bossin had taken from them were laid out on a nearby crate, and Chewbacca stopped long enough to grab his bowcaster and Han's blaster. Han pushed Bossin over onto his back with one foot.
"You don't want to try and follow us," he said. "The Imperials will throw you in prison. But if I see you again, I'll let Chewie pull you apart."
Bossin stared up at him with amusement and open hatred.
"We'll meet again, boyo."
"You'd better hope not. Where do they get all those guys?"
Han muttered. Chewie huffed a sarcastic reply. They were hiding in the shadow of a loading crane, about 20 meters off the ground. What looked like 1,000 stormtroopers milled around the warehouses and docking bays below. Garrett and Sim were both cuffed and kneeling on the ground outside their docking bay, while a black-clad Imperial officer questioned them. Han couldn't hear what they were saying, but he could read the sullen expressions on their faces. So far, Bossin hadn't made an appearance. Han kept waiting for the old Mirialan to show up, led out in cuffs by Imperial troops. But it kept not happening. And the more time that passed without Bossin in custody, the more worried Han got. Maybe they were trying to modify the cuffs for a missing hand. That was probably too much to hope for.
"Think he slipped out before the troops arrived?"
he asked Chewbacca. The Wookiee growled.
"He always was a slippery old god stag," Han said. "You don't think he'd come after us, do you?"
Chewbacca looked at him out of the side of his eye and grunted.
"Well, looks like the boys in white aren't going to be leaving anytime soon, so we need to slip quietly away now."
Chewbacca chuffed a question.
"No, not the Falcon. Not yet. We still need to find our rebel spy, or this was all just a waste of time."
The Wookiee growled out a long response, and Han raised his hands in mock surrender.
Okay, ease down, pal. Yes, I fired the blaster, and so it might seem like our current predicament is my fault, but Bossin was about to shoot you. Should I have let him do that? So in a way, this is your fault."
Chewbacca's low howl was brief and philosophical.
"I mean, you could argue that."
Before Chewbacca could warm up to his rebuttal, Han slid down the crane's ladder to the ground and slipped into the alley between two warehouses. Old, worn-out packing crates littered the space, but there was no sign of any other garbage. For some reason, the utter lack of loose trash in the city was as chilling a sign of Imperial dominance as anything else. Han wondered what happened to people who littered. Whatever it was, clearly it was bad enough that no one did. At the end of the alley, they hid behind an empty crate while a squad of 4 stormtroopers walked by on patrol. Chewbacca fingered his bowcaster and looked to question at Han.
"No,"
Han whispered.
"No more shooting."
Chewbacca quietly huffed back at him.
"No, I did not start it."
The troopers went around a corner, and Han headed off down the street in the opposite direction. They needed a place to hole up for a while, wait for the manhunt to die down before they picked up their search for Scarlet Hark. Holing up and hiding from the law were 2 of Han's specialties, but that was out on the rim, where the Imperial presence was light and the populace cooperative. Seorin was the kind of place where hundreds of stormtroopers responded to a single blaster shot, and Han was willing to bet a lot of credits that there were hundreds more in reserve just waiting for the go signal. And the locals were used to being ground under the Imperial boot heel. They wouldn't dare risk their own safety by hiding fugitives from the law. There wouldn't be seedy bars where a man could slip into the shadows, and a few credits in the right hands would keep anyone from asking questions. Overhead, the traffic of speeders and personal flyers cast fast-moving shadows across gray and glass buildings that reached up so high they appeared to lean in over the walkways below. Massive structures in a flat, institutional style designed to be both functional and oppressive. And everywhere, at every intersection and building corner, the omnipresent eyes of the Empire. Sensor arrays and guard posts dotted the walls of every building. Sleek Imperial speeders cruised overhead, while squads of stormtroopers in urban pacification armor roamed the walkways.
"We may be in a lot of trouble here, Chewie,"
Han said. He took off his weapons belt and put it and his blaster into Chewbacca's satchel. He pointed at the Wookiee's bowcaster.
"Might have to leave that behind, pal."
The Wookiee growled menacingly and clutched the weapon tighter.
"All right, here."
Han took off his long coat and handed it to him. Chewbacca wrapped the bowcaster in it until it was just a long cloth parcel that only looked a little bit like a hidden weapon.
"Guess that'll have to do."
Chewbacca hefted the wrapped weapon over one shoulder and growled out a question.
"Jape it. We'll start with him,"
Han replied.
"He's the one who rolled on her, so maybe he knows where she's hiding. Besides which, we haven't got anything else to go on."
Chewbacca howled and waved his arms around, pointing out the scale of the city and the size of the Imperial presence.
"Well, we'll just be careful, won't we?" Han said, annoyed. "We'll hit the port bars first."
Growling to himself, Chewbacca shrugged and started walking alongside Han.
"And if we keep a bright smile and a jaunty step, we're just two more loyal and happy subjects of the Empire, right? No reason for anyone to stop us."
If Chewbacca was unconvinced, he kept it to himself. Han walked back toward the dock district, where they'd left the Falcon, using as a landmark a particularly tall building with a copper-colored top that angled up like a spear point. He hoped there weren't two of them. He kept an eye out for a map or an information kiosk, but this area of the city seemed to be primarily warehouse space. There were far more droids than people, and almost nothing in the way of services for humans. Heavy lifting droids moved massive crates from building to building, and smaller tech droids, R2 and R3 units for the most part, zipped about on obscure tasks. Occasionally, a squad of stormtroopers moved past in the distance, making Han change course to avoid crossing paths. A street-sweeping droid rolled by, beeping quietly to itself as it scrubbed a stretch of walkway covered by an oil spill from a malfunctioning lifter. An eye on a long stalk tracked Han and Chewbacca as they walked by it. Han nodded to it as they passed.
"See?"
Han began.
"You just have to look like you belong."
Halt!
The cleaning droid said in a deep mechanical voice.
"Present valid identification for foot traffic in warehouse sector 11B, or wait for Imperial officers to detain you."
"Sorry, but we're pretty busy,"
Han said, giving the droid his best smile.
"So we'll just..."
"Halt!"
the droid said again. Pieces of its silver shell slid apart, and half a dozen weapons appeared.
"Present valid identification for foot traffic in warehouse sector 11B, or wait for Imperial officers to detain you."
A port irised open, and a small sensor device protruded from it. It waved at them for a moment. Then the droid said,
"Weapon detected! Drop all weapons and place your hands on manipulating appendages in the air."
Chewbacca dropped the coat-wrapped bowcaster and put his arms in the air. One long, multi-jointed arm darted out from the droid and picked up the package. The stalk-mounted eye stayed locked on Han.
"Place your hands on manipulating appendages in the air."
"Yeah," Han said with a sigh. "Already been taken captive once today, so pretty much at my limit."
"Raise your hands,"
the droid insisted stubbornly. Han took a step toward the droid, and it rolled back an equal distance, its eye never moving.
"I bet you street-sweeping droids aren't really allowed to kill the citizens for something like not having the right identification."
"You'd be correct,"
a voice said from behind him.
"But I am."
Chewbacca growled out an angry rebuke.
"I only have eyes up front,"
Han said, raising his hands and turning around slowly.
"You're supposed to be watching behind."
Chewbacca shrugged. a smiling Imperial soldier held a blaster pointed casually at Han. He wore the black uniform of a junior officer and carried himself with a smug certainty common to his rank.
"You may carry on with your duties," the officer said,
and for a moment Han thought he was being let go. Then he heard the whine of the retreating droid.
"Officer, we're
involved in that disturbance at the docks, like as not,"
the officer finished for him. Han took a step back and to the side, trying to get Chewbacca into the trooper's blind spot. The officer shook his head and stepped back to keep them both in view.
"Please stop," the trooper said. "I have men on their way, and it really does look better on the reports if I take you alive."
Chewbacca roared, and the officer spun toward him. He was just starting to turn back when Han hit him with a hard, straight kick in the midsection. The officer stumbled back, but he grabbed Han's boot on the way down, pulling Han with him. The struggle was brief, and afterward Chewbacca helped him drag the dazed trooper into an alley. A few minutes later, Han emerged, wearing an Imperial uniform. Chewbacca eyed him critically and growled.
"Yeah, laugh it up,"
Han said, straightening his sleeves and pulling on the officer's black cap.
"At least this way I can wear a blaster. You're heading back to the ship."
Chewbacca growled.
"Yeah, but we're not going to find one of these Imperial outfits in your size. And they're on the lookout for us right now, not me. So head back to the ship and get it warmed up. I'll find Hark and we'll get the hell out of here."
Chewbacca gave a questioning whine.
"I got a better idea,"
Han said, holding up the officer's data pad.
"I'd be willing to bet our boy Japet is on the Imperial watch lists, known as associates and hangouts. I'm an Imperial now, so I'll just look him up."
Chewbacca barked out another long laugh.
"Come on,"
Han said.
"I can't always be wrong."
Chapter 6
Kanel Percy, data technician, 4th class, sighed, pulled up another entry on his monitor, and shook his head. Around him, the data control center was busy as a hive. At the next desk, Miki shook her head in sympathy and tried not to grin. Secretly, Kanel was enjoying her attention.
"How about Japet Sawn, sir?"
he said.
"Maybe,"
Lieutenant Hanunu Sololo said in the earpiece.
"What's his background?"
"His NS profile, sir."
"Sure, that."
Kanel tapped through the screens.
"Larceny. Served 2 years in the work camp on Mangan 3. No present known address."
"Any known, rebel associations?"
Kanel closed his eyes.
"Would you like me to check the PF profile too, sir?"
Miki giggled, pressing the back of her hand to her lips.
"Yes, do that,"
Sololo said. Kanel clicked through.
"You know, you have access to all these files on your datapad, sir."
"Mine's malfunctioning. The encryption protocol, needs upgrading."
"Maybe I can help you with that?"
"Just read me his PF profile."
"Read it to you? Yes, sir,"
he said for Miki's benefit.
"Just a moment. Here we are. Yes, sir. He was associated peripherally with the resistance cell they caught last year in Port Chait. Questioned but not prosecuted. No record since then."
"Close enough,"
Sololo said.
"Do we have any known associates that we do have addresses for?"
Kanel hunched forward, his palms over his eyes. He kept his voice bright and pleasant.
"Let me check his RQ history for you, sir."
Miki was slapping her thigh now, her face dark with repressed hilarity. Kanel hummed to himself as he worked.
His closest known associate is a Trandoshan dock worker named Seer Hask, with a birth address of 113-624-E45.
Hold on. 624... What was the rest?
E45, sir.
Got it. Thank you. Good work.
The connection dropped. Kanell pulled off his earpiece and looked over at Miki. She was still shaking with laughter, tears streaming down her cheeks.
Where do they get these people?
Kanell asked, before the next connection request came through. Seer Hask considered himself in the mirror. The cut on his right head ridge had almost healed, but the scales there were the bright green of an adolescent. He rubbed at the spot with his thumb pad, hoping to scruff the scales to something a little nearer a mature man's gray. He didn't want to get cosmetic abrasives, but maybe if no one saw him... A knock came at the door of his berth. 3 strong blows. Seer lurched back from the mirror, falling into his warning hiss automatically. The berth was tiny. It wasn't more than 4 steps from his privacy corner to the door. The human man in the doorway had the uniform of an Imperial officer and the demeanor of a salesperson. Hask disliked him immediately.
"You're Seer Hask?"
the man asked.
"Maybe."
"Japet said I'd find you here. That you could help me out."
"He was wrong,"
Seer hissed. He tried to close the door, but the officer had already stepped into the berth.
"He seemed pretty certain,"
the Imperial said, sweeping off his hat. His hair was a shaggy mop of brown, unlike the razor-cut Imperial style. Seer's pupils narrowed, and he flexed his hands.
"Maybe we should go talk to him."
"Maybe you should step back out of here,"
Seer snarled.
"This is my berth."
The man gestured at his uniform.
"Do you think I care about whether this is your berth or not?"
Seer flexed his pectoral muscles and bared his teeth. The man's uniform didn't fit right either. Too tight at the shoulders and loose at the gut. The lopsided smile was rich with threat, but it was the kind of threat that got settled in the street outside a bar, not in an interrogation chamber.
"Cut the crap,"
Seer said.
"Who are you? What do you want? And what makes you think I can or will give it to you?"
"I need to find Japet,"
the man said, dropping the ruse without a hint of chagrin.
"You're his friend. You can tell me where to find him."
"If I'm his friend, I'm sure as hell not going to tell you where to find him. Get out."
"Under other circumstances, I would," the man said. "But he made a decision, and that decision affected me and my job, and now I'm going to need him to make it right."
Seer weighed a few possible responses. Japet's a small-time creep who will never make anything right in his whole blasted life. Or, "I don't care about you and your problems, so get out." Or, "How about we call security and see if they can help you?" In the end, he opted for punching the man in the gut. The fake officer's breath whooshed out, and he doubled over as Seer brought a knee up to break his descending nose. Only the blow didn't connect. The man wrapped an arm around Seer's leg and lifted. Seer windmilled his arms, trying to keep his balance. His claws raked the walls, throwing sparks from the metal, but he went down with a clang. The world went a little quieter for a few seconds, and the universe contracted to the interior of Seer's body, and maybe a few inches past it. The man rolled onto him, putting a forearm lock across Seer's throat.
"Okay," the man said. "I tried being nice and asking."
"Didn't,"
Seer croaked past the choking arm.
"What?"
"Didn't ask. Weren't being nice."
"Oh, okay. Will you please tell me where I can find Japet?"
"No."
"All right, then,"
the man said, and punched him in the face. The blow was surprisingly strong. Seer tasted the metallic flavor of his own blood.
Please?
Seer twisted, bringing his claws up toward the man's sides. A few more inches and he'd peel back the fake Imperial skin until the ribs all showed. The man broke off the hold, pushing back just far enough to drop an elbow across Seer's neck.
Pretty please?
The lights seemed dimmer than they'd been, and Seer's breath sounded close and wet in his own ears. He rolled onto his belly, got to his hands and knees. The man kicked again, trying to shove him off balance, but Seer pushed up. His punch went wide, skinning by the other's head and leaving a dent in the middle of the berth's wall. He pulled his arm back for an open-handed rake that would spill the man's guts on the floor. The muzzle of a blaster dug into Seer's neck.
Sugar on top?
You pull that trigger, Seer said, and the real security force will be...
Yeah, I know. But we could avoid the whole thing if you just tell me where to find Japet.
Seer licked his bloody lips. He could feel the swelling under his scales. When he went to the docks, the one thing no one would be paying attention to was the bright scales on his right head ridge. Seer grinned. Japet was an idiot anyway.
He's staying with Amini. That's his girlfriend.
Great, the man said. And how do I find her?
When he'd first come in, Amini had thought the Imperial officer looked like trouble. Two drinks after that, he was actually starting to seem a little cute. Another drink, and she was wondering if maybe it was going to be an interesting night after all.
I don't believe you,
he said. His smile was sly and warm, and it made her feel like he was laughing at a joke that she was in on, even though he wasn't.
You don't have a boyfriend?
Amini drew her fingertip around the lip of her glass.
Well,
she said, and stuck her tongue out at him a little. Across the bar, her roommate, Keys, made a mildly obscene gesture of encouragement. Amini ignored her.
I used to. He's a jerk. I broke up with him a while ago.
Does he know that?
The officer asked, putting his hand on her knee.
You bet he does. I put him and all his crap in the hall outside my berth.
Of course you did,
he said as if he were talking to himself.
He's been stealing my stuff. I told him one more time, and he was out. And then it was one more time, and then he was out. I kind of miss him, though. Not him. I just kind of, you know.
She locked her gaze on his.
Miss.
The smile came again, long and slow, and Amini felt herself blush a little. She tried to count back how many drinks she'd had. It might have been more than three. Well, what the hell? Only live once. She moved forward in the seat, lost her balance a little, caught herself, and kissed his cheek. His arm curled around her, his hand against her waist as if it belonged there. She bit her lips a little and lifted an eyebrow.
Probably I shouldn't have kicked him out,
she said, her voice a little lower than usual.
Probably. I should have called you. You deal with things like that, don't you?
Missing, you mean?
Thieves.
That too, he agreed.
How long have you been in security?
She asked. He chuckled.
Depends on how you count it.
She excused herself to the women's room to check her makeup, and when she came back out, he was gone. She spent the rest of the night sitting with Keys and her friends from resource management, feeling cranky and let down. Her night didn't hit bottom until it was almost time to go home.
What's the matter?
Keys asked.
My data pad,
Amini said,
pressing a hand to her belt.
I thought I brought it, but it must be back at...
Even drunk, she had the physical memory of a man's hand around her waist, his fingers against her body.
Son of a Bantha,
she said.
Baby,
Japheth said, stepping into the corridor. He was wearing a splash of cologne and held a fistful of flowers he'd bought for half a credit from a vending machine on the fourth level.
Minnie, baby, I got your message. You hear?
In the shadows, something moved, and Japheth smiled a little.
I see you back there, he said. I knew you were gonna call me. I told you, you remember? I told you you'd call me. You can't go without your big Japheth man, can you? No, you can't.
You might be surprised,
a man's voice said behind him. Japheth whirled. The man in the shadows wore an Imperial officer's uniform, but the face was wrong. Not deformed or anything, it just belonged someplace else.
Who are you? Japheth demanded. Where's Amini?
The man smiled.
Wait for it. It'll come.
Japheth narrowed his eyes. He knew the guy. He'd seen him before, and recently. And then, with a rush of ice in his veins, he knew. He spun around, half expecting the Wookiee to be standing behind him. Fear lit his nerves, and he stumbled back.
Please, Captain Solo, don't kill me,
Japheth said.
I'm sorry, it was Boston, he made me.
Solo spread his hands, smiling without the expression ever reaching his eyes.
You know, nobody ever believes that line, right? No offense taken, I've used it a couple of times myself. I'm just telling you it never works.
I'm sorry, please don't shoot me,
Japheth said. He tripped over his own feet, falling backward. The flowers scattered on the pristine corridor floor. The rebel pilot knelt beside him, blaster in hand.
So here's the thing. I know why you did it. Boston promised to pay you. I'm a businessman. I understand that math. But because of you, I missed my cargo. And I have to find it now. You're gonna help me.
I can't!
Japheth said, tears welling in his eyes. Boston had sworn that Solo would be off-planet almost as soon as they nabbed him. He didn't want to guess what happened to the others.
You should reconsider that,
Solo said, his voice getting rough.
I want to! It's not that I don't want to! I can't! I don't know where she is! It's not like she told me anything!
She told you enough to set a trap for me.
She didn't tell me anything,
Japheth said.
I found out about the drop because two of the guys from the Rebels were talking about it. I did some work for her a few times because the pay was good. Little stuff. Working lookout when the guys were carrying a couple of data disks one place to another. Getting some dirt on some Imperial somebody.
Enough she started thinking you were on her side, Solo said.
I've only ever seen Hark a few times. But there's this place down on level 8 where these guys hang out sometimes, and I was there, and everyone was a little drunk, and someone was talking about how they weren't going to have to deal with any more of Hark's errands because she was pulling out.
That's the kind of talent she's got to work with?
Solo said, shaking his head.
No wonder it went south.
I guess, yeah. They said she was using the fountain drop. I took it to Boston because he can use things like that sometimes.
So you didn't mean anything against me. You were just trying to get Hark's operation blown.
Boston pays really well,
Japheth said sorrowfully.
Don't ask where that money came from. All right. How do I find Hark now?
I don't know,
Japheth said.
There has to be some way to signal her.
Solo said, looking down the corridor as if he were a hunter on a trail.
Does she know you're on sight?
Don't know. Like I said, I only met her a few times. but she's got a reputation for remembering stuff you wouldn't think. So maybe. I don't know.
If I shot you, would it make the local news?
Oh, you know what you could do?
Japet said, snapping his fingers.
You could talk to the guy who said he was setting up the fountain drop. His name's Weirit, and his place isn't far from here.
Maybe, Solo said. Doesn't have the advantage of shooting you. I'd really like to shoot you.
Weirit opened the door a fraction of an inch. He was in his underwear, his hair still wild from the pillow and all thought of sleep gone. The Imperial Guard had a black jersey, a black and gray cap, and an annoyed expression. Weirit's hand shook as he very carefully, quietly, pressed his blaster against the door. He'd only have one shot. He had to kill the Imperial on the first try.
I'm with the Rebel Alliance,
the Imperial said.
Hark's drop was compromised. I need to know where she's staying.
Weirit narrowed his eyes. His finger didn't leave the trigger.
How do I know you're telling the truth?
The Imperial shrugged. One, I didn't come in with 50 stormtroopers behind me. Two, we're talking here instead of a holding cell. Three, an interrogator droid didn't take off half your fingernails before I asked.
Weirit frowned.
No,
he said.
Right.
The air shaft went down below Han for what looked like half a kilometer. He hung in the window frame, his fingers aching until they felt as if they were on fire. If he had pulled the window open another few centimeters, the grenade would have triggered. Windows from the other berths and apartments lined the walls, looking out into one another or else at the bare drop. Five levels up, a catwalk stretched across the void. Han's grapnel line was like a thread of spider web between Hark's window and the high, empty walkway above. He tried the door for almost an hour, plagued by visions of Hark inside, either dead or held in silence by stormtroopers or Bossin, or just sleeping deep enough that she didn't hear him. Going around to the back had seemed like a good idea at the time.
He shifted his grip on the window. He couldn't hold on much longer.
Just inside, the black monofilament thread had pulled at the proton grenade switch, tugging the little kettle-shaped device to the edge of the cheap breakfast table. He couldn't tell if it was armed, but if so, the drop to the floor would set off an explosion strong enough to breach a ship's hull. Unless it was on a timer, in which case he'd probably have been dead by now.
He pulled himself as close to the window as he could, pressing his mouth to the opening.
The air inside smelled like roasted peppers.
Hello?
He whispered urgently into the apartment.
Could use a little hand here.
Hello?
There was no reply. His knuckles hurt. Hark was gone then. She'd left her old place and trapped it against intrusion from the Imperials. The safe play was to go back up the line to the catwalk. But if there were any clues to where Hark had gone, they were going to be on the other side of the window. And he didn't have any other leads to follow.
All right, Han said to himself. It's not that hard. I can do this.
He couldn't keep his grip and also work, so he held on with his right hand and stretched his left through the thin gap in the window until it was all the way into the apartment. He made a fist and let his right hand go. His bald left hand was too big to fit back through the space, and the grapnel line was strong enough to support him.
It still hurt like blazes, but it freed his right hand.
He pulled his blaster and ejected the power cell, catching it between his little finger and the heel of his palm before it dropped into the abyss below him. Shorting out the contacts would have been a lot easier with two hands, but a few seconds later, he had the case cracked and the power leads were starting to heat up past the point of comfort. Pulling from the shoulder, he hauled himself closer to the window. The proton grenade teetered on the edge of the table as he slipped his fingers in through the open window, holding the shorting power cell against the frame just where the monofilament attached. A trickle of blood ran down his left wrist. Voices echoed above him. Someone was approaching the catwalk. He tried to push the power cell a little closer to the line. The hot smell of melting filament began to overpower the scent of peppers. The voices came closer and clearer. The tiny voices of stormtroopers.
"Come on,"
Han said.
"Come on."
Inside the apartment, the monofilament broke, floating down like a wisp of smoke. Han shoved the window open enough to slide through, cut the grapnel line, and haul himself over the sill. He lay on the apartment floor, curled around his protesting hand. The troopers' voices didn't rise in alarm. He sat up, trembling. The proton grenade showed armed. Gently, he pushed the switch back, and a second later, the readout shifted to inactive. Across the air shaft, a small figure looked out the opposite window, long dark hair silhouetted against the light. Han waved and gestured. The child went to open her window, paused, and then followed through. Her eyes were wide.
"Lost my key card!"
he shouted across the shaft.
"Oh,"
she said. He grinned, nodded, and closed the blinds. All the rooms were trapped in the same way. Simple, fast, efficient. Not foolproof by any means, but effective enough. There were still clothes in the bedroom. The food in the storage unit hadn't gone bad. Scarlet Hark had been there, but she was gone, and there was no note saying where she'd gone. He examined the bedroom, the bath, the dining area, all the small signs of occupancy, but nothing that helped. Scarlet Hark drank Surian tea. She solved math puzzles before she went to sleep. She ordered breakfast meals of eggs and roasted peppers from a nearby restaurant. Apart from the death traps on the windows and doors, she could have been anyone. He'd been working all night. Somewhere high above where the city reached the sky, the sun would be coming up soon. Chewbacca was probably pacing the Falcon right now, wondering what had happened to him. Han sat at the table. His eyes felt as if someone had rubbed grit into them, and his wrists ached. The Imperial Guard's uniform was cheap and uncomfortable. Start to finish, it just hadn't been his best day ever. When he stretched his neck, the joints cracked. There had to be a way. There had to be something that would point him toward Hark, or give her a way to find him. He rubbed his eyes with the palms of his hands until blobs of false color danced before him. There had to be a way. His stomach growled. He hadn't eaten since before the failed drop. The scent of yesterday's roasted peppers started smelling almost good. He frowned, sat forward. The recycling bin was half full of old tea and the wire remains of a robotic project. Greasy wrapping paper had an order, number 29, peppers and eggs, printed on it with a comm code, the address of Hark's apartment, and the minimalist logo of a Twi'lek female holding a plate of food. Kai'i's Grill. Best Sanos plate in the Empire. There was another wrapper underneath it from the day before. And another. She had a habit then. It didn't seem like it could matter, but something tugged at his mind. He frowned at it for a moment. Why would it have her address on it? Then he knew. She had it delivered. And if she'd been getting it delivered here, she might be getting it delivered someplace else. Han smiled and tapped his fingertip against the words.
"I ordered a number 29,
the scruffy lieutenant said, slapping the back of his hand into his palm.
"It was supposed to be delivered, and now I have to come all the way down here."
Kai'i leaned against the counter. She'd hardly been there 2 hours, and her feet already hurt. The man scowled at her. His black uniform looked like it had been slept in, and he had a day's worth of stubble on his chin. She comforted herself with the idea that his superior officer would be chewing him out before lunchtime. The breakfast rush was in full swing. Aliens of half a dozen different species pushing and jockeying for a place to stand. None of the sharp-lined, high official types were here. All of them had the tired expressions of work beings, facing down another long day. The air was thick with aromatic grease, and the voices of the three Twi'lek men, her husband and brothers, shouting obscenities from the kitchen.
When did you order it?
Kai asked.
This morning,
the man said, waving his hand vaguely.
A particular time this morning?
She asked, the two leku that hung from the back of her head, twitching in annoyance.
Long enough, he said. Plenty long enough.
Let me check,
she said, with the best smile she could manage. She leaned back toward the kitchen and shouted in her own language,
Temer! These nerfs behind out here says he ordered a 29 sent out.
It's almost done,
her brother said.
Why isn't it out yet?
Her brother leaned out of the kitchen, holding up the wrapping.
I printed up the order 15 minutes ago, and we're in the middle of the rush. That's why not.
A bronze and blue delivery droid zoomed past him, two Sinos plates in its spider-like silver arms, and flew out over the heads of the crowd. Kai sighed and turned back to the lieutenant.
The order must have been delayed, sir,
she said in basic.
It's almost done now. I'm very sorry for the inconvenience.
It's all right,
the man said. His smile was gentler now. He was almost good-looking.
Just wrap it up when it's ready, and I'll take it.
Of course, sir.
I mean, I don't want to be in nerfs behind about the whole thing.
Kai blushed, but the man's smile was so warm, his eyes so merry, she found herself smiling too. There were two beds in Scarlet Hark's hired rooms. One she'd slept in, the other had her equipment laid out in neat rows and columns. The magnetic grapnel, three blasters, each from a different kind of material that could pass Imperial scanners. The false ID array, her security countermeasure pack, each black steel tool in place like the legs of a centipede. The data disks with the schedule and internal layout of the intelligence command offices and the offices above and below them as well. Everything she needed was in place, except for one thing. The door chimed. When she opened it, a man was standing there, her breakfast in his hand. He looked both exhausted and smug.
Scarlet Hark,
he said, bowing ironically and presenting her meal like he'd done something clever. Her spine went stiff. An Imperial officer? Only, no.
Aren't you a little old for a delivery boy?
Depends on what you want delivered, he said. Leia said you'd called for pickup.
She accepted the wrapped package with a smile.
You're late.
Chapter 7. In person, Scarlet Hark looked sharper than the stills in her profile. Sitting cross-legged on the unmade bed, she unwrapped her meal with an economy of motion that gave the slant of her eyebrows and the half-smile on her lips a sense of purpose and professionalism. The smell of spiced egg filled the room, reminding Han that he was still hungry. Ignoring the feeling, he stepped over to take another look at the equipment arrayed on the spare bed. Some of the items laid out there he didn't recognize, but he was pretty sure that if a real Imperial security officer had stepped into the room, it would have meant a firing squad for everyone in half a kilometer radius, just for the sake of completeness. Scarlet Hark sighed. Her finger was on the takeout wrapper where her address was listed.
I should have thought of that, she said. I've been in the field too long, getting sloppy.
I wasn't going to say anything,
Han said. A security droid with a blue metal casing stepped out of the closet.
CZ, this is my ride out of here. Ride out of here? This is CZ-33.
The pleasure is mine,
the droid said in a deep, rolling voice.
Certainly is,
Han said, and then turned his attention back to Scarlet.
The name's Solo. Han Solo. Might have heard of me.
Might have,
Scarlet said, the corners of her lips pulling out another millimeter.
In my line of work, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, the sooner we get you out of here, the sooner that stops being a problem. Why don't you pack up your toy box here and we can get to the dock? Chewie should be ready for us.
Scarlet sighed and leaned back against her pillows.
There's a problem with that. There's something we need to do first.
Han shook his head.
No, there isn't. You called us for a ship out of here. Ship's here. It's time to go.
True enough,
she said around a mouthful of eggs.
But that means it's time to do the work I couldn't do when I didn't have a way out. Do you want some of this? You keep looking at it.
Since you're offering,
Han said. Scarlet Hark ripped the takeout package in two and put a portion of the meal on one half, talking as she did so.
Have you ever heard of Ezio Galassian?
No. Why? Is he important?
Scarlet nodded to the droid.
CZ, do the honors.
A hollow projector emerged from the droid's left eye, and tiny figures appeared above the bed. One was a man with an athlete's build and flowing shoulder-length hair. He was screaming at an older man who was cowering before him. As Han watched, two floating droids, the size of two bald human fists, followed the long-haired man's sweeping gestures, slamming into the older man's ribs and the side of his head. The older man went down, face and knees slack.
That's him with the sparring floaters,
Scarlet said.
Seems charming, Han said. I'm guessing not your old boyfriend.
He's the Emperor's pet astrocartographer. Runs private missions for the highest ranks of the Empire. Answers to no one, but sometimes he shares information with the security services. He's also a megalomaniac, a fanatic, and a murderer.
CZ turned off the hologram, and Galassian vanished. Han accepted the rough paper with its load of egg and pepper. It was still warm, and the smell made his stomach feel empty and eager. He scooped up a mouthful with two fingers. It tasted better than he'd expected.
I've been infiltrating his operations for the last year and a half,
Scarlet went on.
He was on an exploratory mission of some sort. Very quiet. And when he showed back up, he was very, very pleased with himself. The rumor was he'd found something interesting. The sort of discovery that the Emperor would give his favorite pet a treat for. Only someone stole the report and all the preliminary data from his private station on Taban and wiped his file system.
Someone being you,
Han said.
Unfortunately, no,
Scarlet Hark said.
An amateur got lucky. No planning ahead of the heist and no back end once it was over. Galassian figured out he'd been compromised almost at once, and he threw a fit. Had his entire household staff killed or wiped and reprogrammed.
Harsh,
Han said, sitting on the edge of her bed.
CZ and I were in his household staff at the time,
Scarlet Hark said.
So yes, it was unpleasant. I was 3 days from getting a covert copy of his whole record system, and he would never have known it happened. Instead, I wound up tracking through an ice jungle for 3 weeks, breathing stale air out of tubes and drinking recycled water.
Recycled water doesn't sound good, Han said.
It was undignified.
Still very sorry about that, ma'am,
the droid said.
But,
Scarlet went on,
it also gave me enough time below Galassian's radar that when I made it back to a civilized port, he'd moved on, taken his personal Star Destroyer and headed out. Somewhere. There was a full investigation going, trying to track down what had happened to the data.
She finished the last of her eggs and crumpled the paper in her fist.
Security had a task force on it for a month and a half. They must have pulled in 100 people for interrogation. And probably 3/4 of those came back out in enough pieces that they could get sewn back together.
She tossed the wadded paper across the room, and the droid plucked it out of the air.
Did they find anything?
Han asked, despite himself.
Yes.
What?
Don't know,
Scarlet said with a sunny smile.
Whatever it was, it has half the Imperial fleet getting pulled off missions, and the security service is scrambling like a Kika nest on fire.
Can I take that for you, sir?
The droid asked, extending his hand. Han put the torn paper with its eggy film into the blue metal palm, still chewing thoughtfully.
What did this astrocartographer find in the first place?
He asked.
Good question. That's what I was trying to find out. Only the amateur got it sloppy before I could get it clean.
Well, did the Imperials get whatever it was back? Or did they just find out who stole it?
Scarlet lifted her hands.
Dunno.
Han scratched the back of his neck.
Well, that's...
It really is. The good part is that the security force's complete and final report on the theft is about 10 minutes from here by hired flyer. Maybe an hour on foot. Losing that data has the security forces throwing a quiet seizure, and everything they know is right there for the taking.
Han smirked.
Unless another bunch of amateurs gets to it before you.
Not likely. It's on a physically isolated deck in the Imperial Intelligence Service Center. It's encrypted with Galassian's personal cipher, and they have a constant audit routine that sounds the alarm if anyone so much as makes a copy.
Well, that's too bad then, sister, Han said. Because I wasn't hired on to have the security service blow my brains out. I was supposed to get in, get you, and get out. And that's what I plan to do.
Well then, sister, you'll have to wait until I'm done. I've spent too long on this to walk away.
Brother. If I call you sister, you call me brother. See, because...
CZ, let's see the layout.
Of course, ma'am,
the droid said, and five layers of architectural schematics appeared floating above the sheets. The lines glowed in crisp blue. Scarlet reached into the display.
The first problem is getting into the building at all. The intelligence services control the 80th and 81st floors, but there are access ways on 70 and 73. No one gets into the complex without authorization.
Which you don't have,
Han said. Scarlet pulled a card from her pocket and tossed it through the projection to him. Her face looked out from identification for Choyo Sebastio, environmental technician, third class.
I was thinking I'd make you my apprentice, but if you're the guard acting as escort, that's probably better. CZ, can we arrange that?
The card is already being programmed, ma'am. I took the liberty of capturing Sir's image when he arrived.
Spiffy.
Hey,
Han said.
Once we're in, we make our way here,
Scarlet said, tracing her finger through the tiny glowing corridors. A pathway of soft green followed where she traced.
It's the Probe and Sensor Encoding Regulatory Council Annex. Still part of intelligence services, but lower security. We'll need to watch for security droids here and here.
Two blobs of dull orange appeared in the schematic.
And there are regular patrols that take this path. And this.
Two orange pathways appeared, intersecting the green. Tiny orange dots tracked along them, marking the positions of the guards in time.
This is a terrible plan,
Han said.
There's a cable conduit access here.
The green pathway wormed up through the floors.
It carries the main trunk cables from transmission towers on the roof to the processing levels down in the 40s. Bad place to slip and fall, but it'll get us to the Intelligence Service Center. We'll need to cut our way through.
Because no one will notice that.
I have decking tape, she said. I've got a high-strength grapnel line that will get us up the vertical parts, and that will get us here.
A tiny point of brilliant red appeared on the map, very close to the end of the green pathway.
Where everything will be open and easy, and no one will get hurt,
Han said.
Where I can use the passcodes and identity records I got while I was working with Galassian to get access and drop a copy of the report to a memory chip.
Scarlet's mouth twisted into a tiny smile that was as much regret as amusement. Han looked at the little crimson dot, but the glow didn't give him anything that would explain her expression.
All right, he said. And then what?
And then every alarm on the planet goes off, and we leave very, very quickly.
Let's go back to my last points, which were terrible plan and not going to happen.
This is the part where things are a little more problematic, she said. I haven't been able to get a full breakdown of the Intelligence Service emergency intrusion protocols, but we'll have the advantage of knowing that it's going to happen. No one will expect that anybody would attempt to breach physical security like this.
You know, there's a reason why they wouldn't expect that, right?
But this is why I needed to wait until I had a way off-planet that could go immediately. There's going to be a gap when people are confused and scrambling. If we're not in hyperspace before they restore order, we're screwed.
Han waved his arms through the hologram, and CZ let the image fade.
We're in the Galactic Core, and we're working for the Rebellion,
Han said.
In most contexts, that's screwed enough right there. I can get you out of here right now, but that's because I'm the best pilot there is. If we light up the security arrays before we even get to the ship...
You're not that good?
Scarlet asked innocently.
Nobody's that good.
Not even the man who made the Kessel Run in 13 parsecs?
12,
Han said around a grin.
I did it in 12, so you have heard of me.
Scarlet Hark smiled, and then sobered.
I've spent a lot of time trying to find out what Galassian found, and I've watched some good people die because I asked them to. I have to get that before we leave. If you want to wait in the hangar, I won't stop you, but I think my chances would be better if you came with.
You see now, that's sounding more like you're asking for my help.
I'm asking for your help.
They were silent for a moment. Han tapped his fingers against the fake leather of the Imperial uniform's boot.
What do I get out of it?
He asked.
Bragging rights.
That's pretty thin.
Bragging rights and the undying gratitude of the Alliance.
How about bragging rights, undying gratitude, and 3,000 credits as a performance bonus?
Done, she said.
Han blinked.
Really?
I'd have gone to 6 if you'd asked.
I'd take 6.
3 it is, she said, standing up and checking the time. If we leave here in an hour, that will put us just about where we need to be. What do you need to get the ship ready?
The ship's ready, Han said. What about your pet droid? How does he fit into this? Ma'am,
CZ asked, and the electronic voice seemed to hold some weight of meaning that Han couldn't quite fathom. Scarlet looked at the blue droid, and her face seemed to soften. Han felt a moment of awkwardness and discomfort, as if he was seeing something intimate.
This is it, she said. Finish this, and we're square.
Yes, ma'am,
the droid said, and bowed its head. Scarlet put her hand on its shoulder.
Thank you,
she murmured. Han cleared his throat.
Am I missing something here?
Don't worry about it,
Scarlet said, her voice crisp and amused again.
Let's go over the plan.
CZ reformed the schematic hologram, and for half an hour, Han and Scarlet Hark went over each detail, where the entrances to the building were, the schedule of the patrols, the placement of the conduit. CZ interrupted once to deliver a forged identity card with Han's face on it, still warm from the fabrication unit. Scarlet packed her equipment from the spare bed with a practiced efficiency. The tools of spycraft folded into the seams of her pants and the sleeves of her jacket. When they were done, Han called Chewbacca on his comlink. The Wookiee's roar overloaded the tiny speaker, making his words a stuttering crackle.
Well, I'm checking in now, aren't I?
Han said.
I found her, but there's an errand we need to do before we go.
Chewbacca's growl was a warning.
I don't like it either, but I talked her up to a 3,000 credit bonus if I help her out. You just make sure the engines are warmed up and the clearances are ready. We're probably going out hot.
Chewbacca whined and grunted. Scarlet raised her eyebrows and smiled. Han found himself smiling back.
Well, we didn't get where we are by playing it safe, did we?
He asked. Chewbacca's shout was louder and more obscene than usual. Han dropped the connection to the soft sound of Scarlet's laughter.
He knows you pretty well, she said.
We've shipped together for a long time, Han said. Are we ready to do this?
She frowned.
You look like you slept in those clothes, she said. It'll stand out. CZ, one last favor?
Of course, ma'am.
Thank you.
For what?
Han said.
What are you thanking him for?
Scarlet tilted her head.
We need to press your uniform. If we had time, we'd get you a haircut, too, but we'll make it work.
All right, but I'm wearing it,
Han said.
So take it off. We don't have much time.
Han hesitated.
If it helps, I promise not to look,
Scarlet said.
No,
Han said, undoing the belt with a violence born of embarrassment.
Go ahead and look if you want. Take a great big long stare.
Scarlet turned to face the door of the room, her long fingered hands laced together behind her. Han pulled off the shirt, then the boots, then the pants. He handed them to the droid.
I'm not looking,
Scarlet said in a teasing sing-song.
I'm not embarrassed,
Han said to the back of her head.
I am a very good-looking man.
Indeed you are, sir. I'll have these for you in a moment.
Chapter 8.
Your droid does good laundry,
Han said, as he and Scarlet rode the lift to the roof of her building. Not only was the officer's uniform cleaned and pressed, but it actually seemed to fit better. Han couldn't see any stitches where the droid had made alterations.
He's not my droid. He's his own,
Scarlet said, but didn't elaborate. The top of the building had a strictly regimented garden space, with planter boxes and fountains. No one was sitting on the benches, which left Han sighing with relief. Someone dressed like an Imperial officer and someone dressed like a maintenance worker climbing into a rental flyer together might be odd enough to be remembered. And once Scarlet's plan went off, Imperial security forces would be swarming through the city looking for their trail. Han had left enough of one with the shootout at the docks. No reason to connect the dots from there to Scarlet Hark.
Over here,
Scarlet said, walking to the landing pad on one side of the roof. She hit the key to summon a flyer.
You have credits on you?
A few,
Han replied.
Give them to me.
I'm not sure,
he started.
Scarlet stabbed her hand at him impatiently. Do you think an Imperial officer traveling with someone of a lesser rank ever pays for anything?
Han handed her his few remaining creds.
I've been robbed before, but never without a fight.
We could fight if you'd feel better,
Scarlet said, raising an eyebrow. Her dark eyes stayed on his as she pulled her long black hair into a practical knot at the back of her neck. She locked it in place by pushing two small sticks through it. Han crossed his arms and shrugged.
You know, I've never in my life been bossed around as much as I have since I hooked up with you rebels. It makes me wonder if you guys actually know what that word means.
What word?
Rebel.
Scarlet carefully went over her gray maintenance jumpsuit, checking to see if her various tools and patches were all in place. She had a methodical nature Han found grating and familiar at the same time.
We're not anarchists,
she said, tugging at the patch on one sleeve that identified her as a level 3 technician.
We have goals. We want to end the Empire.
And replace it with what?
You know what?
Scarlet said. Her crossed arms matched his own.
Are you trying to make fun of me?
It was rhetorical. I've heard the speech, sweetheart. A glorious return to the Republic of old. To a guy like me, a new boss is still a boss.
Then why are you helping us?
Honestly? Still trying to figure that one out.
If she had a reply, the rumble and airwash of the approaching rental flyer drowned it out. She hopped on board and gave the droid driver an address. It waited until Han was seated and Scarlet had dropped a handful of coins into its receptacle. Then the flyer shot up into the sky, Han's belly sinking. Scarlet leaned back in the seat, not looking at him, so Han assumed the conversation was over. The truth was, it was an argument he'd been having with himself ever since the rebel fleet had left Yavin. The Death Star had been destroyed. He'd been given his reward for the rescue of Leia. Jabba was still out there, putting a price on his head and waiting for either his money or his corpse. But he kept lingering, running missions for the rebels, spending time with Leia and Luke, taking chances that the old Han Solo would never have taken. 3,000 credits was nice, but it wasn't any more than a good smuggling run someplace besides the Imperial Corps might have netted him. He was having a progressively harder time convincing himself that he was still doing it for the money. Part of it was watching out for Luke. If there was anyone in the galaxy likely to get in over his head, it was the kid. Part of it was the joy of thumbing his nose at the Empire. But always there was the voice at the back of his head telling him that by joining the rebellion, he'd become less of a rebel than he'd ever been. Flying off to assault yet another impossibly well-defended Imperial stronghold. It was getting to be a bad habit.
Over there, Scarlet said.
She was talking to the droid. The flyer dropped between the towering buildings to stop at the pedestrian level below. They climbed out onto a quiet side street. A walkway wound through carefully cultivated trees and planters set into the narrow strip of sunlight the surrounding buildings allowed in.
Thank you for choosing...
The droid started, but Han slapped the button to shut the flyer's door and cut him off.
Which way?
He asked.
Three more intersections that direction.
She pointed, her voice cool and professional.
There's an Imperial watch post that we can't avoid at the second intersection. They're going to be looking for traffic offenses and street crime, so I doubt they'll stop an officer and a tech.
If they do?
CZ redid your identification, so it should hold up to casual scrutiny. I've had more time to work on mine, so it's even more solid.
Great,
Han replied, checking how tight the blaster sat in its holster at his side. The Imperial sidearm was a clumsy thing. The weight felt wrong in his hand. He worried that if he had to pull it, it would slow him down and throw off his aim.
Stop fidgeting with your weapon,
Scarlet whispered at him as they walked. Han bit back his retort with a smile. The uniform didn't have pockets, so he hooked his thumbs on the belt and tried to match the stiff swagger of the other Imperials. The few pedestrians they passed wore business attire and moved quickly. No one looked at them for more than a second. At first, Han thought it was his uniform that frightened them, but then he noticed that they didn't look at one another either. This was the heart of the Empire. People didn't need a reason to be frightened. Fear was just part of the lifestyle. So maybe that was why he was working with the rebels.
It was as good a reason as any.
Half a dozen stormtroopers and a junior lieutenant manned the observation post. The officer nodded to Han as they walked by, then shot a questioning look at Scarlet. Han shrugged and rolled his eyes in a what-are-you-going-to-do gesture. The officer smiled and shrugged back, a gesture of solidarity. Yeah, just a couple of low-ranking whipcrackers doing their bit for the glory of the Empire. It left Han feeling dirty. No one stopped them until they reached the entrance to the Imperial Intelligence Service Center. The doors were massive and metallic, and looked as if they could stop a blast from a Star Destroyer-grade turbo laser. And while they were open when Han and Scarlet arrived, they were also guarded by a full score of stormtroopers and two officers, one of whom stood next to a large red button on the wall. Han guessed the button would set off the alarm and slam the blast doors shut fast enough to cut a Bantha in half.
Halt!
One of the officers said, holding up an imperious hand. The stormtroopers stood behind him in postures of boredom, though their helmets hid their faces.
Identification.
Lieutenant Sololo,
Han said, handing over his freshly minted identity card and trying to match the boredom of the guards.
Choyo Sebastio,
Scarlet said after the guard looked up from Han's card at her.
Environmental tech, third class.
Business?
Ventilation failure,
Scarlet said, tapping one hand on the tools in her belt.
It's in a secured area, Han added. So guess who gets to waste his day watching her pull cable and patch ventilation holes?
We can have one of our people escort her,
the officer said.
Oops, Han thought. May have overplayed the annoyed card. No, I'm already here. You men keep doing, you know, guarding. That's important work.
Han gave the man a smile and a nod.
They check out,
the officer said, and the knot of stormtroopers parted to let them through.
See?
Scarlet whispered once they were in and walking down a long hallway toward the turbolifts.
No problem.
Saying no problem is a sure sign that everything is about to go terribly wrong,
Han said. He hit the lift button, and a mechanism on the other side of the doors whirred to life.
I'm so glad I brought you along to tell me these things,
Scarlet replied. A man in civilian clothes walked down a side hall and came to stand next to them. He was short, thick through the middle, and balding. He smiled at them without ever meeting their eyes, and then rocked back and forth on the balls of his feet, whistling tunelessly. When the lift arrived, Han let Scarlet enter first, then stepped in after her and put a hand on the man's chest.
Take the next one.
What? Hey!
The man started, but the door snapped shut and cut off whatever else he was about to say.
He might complain to someone,
Scarlet said as they rode up.
Nah, he's a good citizen of the Empire. If he started complaining every time an officer was rude to him, he wouldn't have time for anything else.
Or they'd shoot him,
Scarlet said.
Or that.
Scarlet began pulling tools off her belt and out of her sleeves for the job to come. Cutters, sensors, the grapnel for climbing the long shaft up to the security level.
Each tool exactly the right one for the job. Each perfectly maintained and ready for use.
Han thought of the random boxes of tools lying around the Falcon and made a mental note to have Chewbacca clean up a bit before they boarded. The lift doors snapped open, revealing a long imperial gray corridor with many smaller doors leading off to either side.
Lots of places to get ambushed in here,
Han said, dropping his hand to rest on the butt of his blaster.
It's 11 doors up on the right, Scarlet whispered, and headed off down the corridor at a fast walk.
Han followed, looking over his shoulder as he went.
What are you doing on this level?
A voice demanded, and Han's head whipped around. A high-ranking Imperial officer stood looking at Scarlet with open disdain, his arms crossed behind his back and his chest puffed out with authority. Scarlet lowered her gaze and tried to walk past him. He stepped in front of her, blocking the path with his body.
I said, what are you doing on this level? No non-military personnel above level 10 at any time.
Well, I...
Scarlet said, but the officer turned his attention to Han.
You should know the regulations regarding non-military personnel on secured levels. Who's your commanding officer?